Thanks for listening to the Roman Circus podcast. I'm Matt Baker, and with me, as always, is 2 for 5.55, Zach Mabry. Zach, how are you, my friend?
Matt, I am doing well. It's a good day.
I remember when you used to be able to get 2 Zachs for $5, but they upped it.
It's really those were the days.
Yeah, if you want to follow us on for more witty banter on Twitter, you can follow us at Roman Circus Pod. I'm at Hey, it's Matt Baker. Zach is at Zach Mabry, Z-A-C Mabry. Email us podcast@romancircusblog.com, and that's about it. The podcast wherever podcasts are. Do we have anything in the news? We have a great interview we need to get to, but before that, anything you want to talk about news-wise?
You know, it feels like it's been a slow news week. So,
the news is canceled this week.
News is canceled. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, news is old news.
Yeah.
Who needs it?
We'll keep on it. If anything breaks, you know we'll be there sometime within a week later to discuss it.
Oh, but for sure.
For now, let's get to the interview. Zach, one thing that the people have been asking since we brought the podcast back is, when are you going to have a guest on? That's the question people keep asking. They want to know, when are you going to have a guest, and who is this guest going to be? And folks, we have an answer. We finally have a guest, and it's a great guest. And can you intro him for us, Zach? Give us a little bit of his background.
Yes. So our guest today is a senior at Notre Dame, currently studying philosophy. He was the editor-in-chief of The Rover for 2022 and 2023. And over the past two summers, he's worked for First Things as well as Compact. And our listeners will be familiar with Compact, as we discussed the Michael Lind piece just a few weeks ago. So joining us today is W. Joseph DeRule. W. Joseph, welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
Old W. Joe. Joe, first question, what's it like going to a Protestant university, Notre Dame?
Notre Dame, I guess there's two answers to what it's like going to Notre Dame. There's like the lived experience inside the Catholic mafia on the inside. And mm-hmm. then there's what everyone else hears about. It's great that you can still find like our little mini Catholic university inside Notre Dame, but at the same time, disappointing that institutionally it leaves some things to be desired. But it's been a good experience.
I feel like people are too harsh on Notre Dame sometimes. Like, it's still a school that has, you know, chapels in the dorms and a lot of great Catholic things going on. But then anytime, you know, something comes up, it's always sort of blown up and people write it off. Like there's definitely a lot of good, you know, Catholic stuff to be found at Notre Dame.
The way I like to describe it is it's like going to an intellectually rigorous Benedictine college where you have like 2,000 students that are there to like take their faith seriously, and a little cohort of faculty who are willing to support that, and you can take great classes. Then you should add another 6,000 students and a million HR people and administration types and other professors who just want to be there because it's a quote unquote elite university. There's like the little Newman Guide school that's hidden within the greater Notre Dame orb.
Nice. Yes. I think
to be fair, all the Jesuit colleges and universities have kind of swung to putting the Catholicism in the background, or so it seems. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the knock that a bunch of these places. But Zach, you've been to Notre Dame. Have you been to Notre Dame multiple times? I've never been on campus. You've been for that that conference a few years ago.
Yes. Yeah. I've been to the Notre Dame, the Center of Ethics Conference, a few times. It's always a good time. The most recent one, I posted about it. The podcast was on hiatus, but we did get accompanied by the church out of being able to have our TLM that had been approved, and then the approval was sort of reworked as the mass could happen, but nobody could go except the priest.
And so The approval was reworked and they added two letters on the front. So it said UN. So it said unapproved.
Unapproved.
That's,
yeah.
That's how they worked it.
You know, it was funny though, because they were like, it was this sort of like gotcha moment of like, well, you didn't specify that anybody would be going to it. So we just approved that it could happen. And it was like, well, I guess we've been defeated in the marketplace of ideas today, guys. We should have thought of that. So yes, next that up, was
got to get the lawyers involved.
Yes. So yeah, I had the job of turning people away at the door.
Including me, but I'll be silent on my thoughts on this matter.
Were you at that mass?
I was one of the people that Zach had to turn away at the door.
Mm.
It was a delicate situation because it wasn't the people there and the priest that had to like enforce no one could go to it was clearly not the one that made the rules. And so you can't like,
sure.
You have to kind of be
it
respectful.
Never is, you know?
Right. Like, so you can't like shoot the messenger kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But in the moment it's sort of infuriating and, you know, you kind of want to make a scene or something. So that was partially why it ended up being me. Cause I, despite what anyone who listens to the pod or follows me on Twitter may think, I'm pretty good at like keeping the peace in the moment. So I was kind of trying to like, okay, you know, let's, you know, so we didn't have the like army of people with their phones out recording everything like to own the libs or whatever. So it you know, it was fine. I mean, obviously traumatic, but, mm-hmm. but you know, with enough time and healing, we can all move on.
Yeah, I had kind of forgotten about that, but that's not why we had you on today, Joe. We had you on because we're really jealous. You're getting sued. You're in a lawsuit over your beliefs and over your stances, which is all what every podcaster desires is to be taken to task for their stances and their beliefs to really drum up some Patreon bucks. So that's why we're having you on. We're hoping to get in on this windfall, but it all stems off a piece you wrote for the Irish Rover last mm-hmm. October called Keo. Is it Keo?
Keo, yeah.
Keo school professor offers abortion access to students.
So tell us about the Rover, generally speaking, because I at my college, we didn't have a lot of, we just had one student newspaper and it was like lame and boring. What is the Rover? So
the Rover is trying to be the not that student newspaper. But yeah, so the Rover was founded in 2003 by a group of Notre Dame students. And there's a much older and bigger publication, The Observer, on campus, which is like the official campus publication. I think they publish daily or a few times a week. But the Rover just publishes every other week. The idea was we're going to incorporate a South Bend nonprofit, a totally separate entity from the university, but have it be managed and run by Notre Dame students with the explicit mission of upholding Notre Dame's Catholic identity. So yeah, I think it was students in the early 2000s were starting to realize, okay, like Notre Dame is a great university, but it's in danger of caving on its Catholic mission like so many other Catholic schools have in the past several decades. So yeah, it just reports on all issues, both good and bad, that show how Notre Dame is or is not living up to her Catholic identity.
So this is not funded by the university?
Correct, it is not.
Is it affiliated basically only in name, like Irish Rover, or is there...
Yeah, so the only connection with the university is that it's run by Notre Dame students. And we have like maybe 10 faculty advisors who have like a informal connection with you with the paper. So they'll write columns for us every now and again. They'll keep us in the loop on what's happening on the administration faculty side at the university and help us out kind of generally with stories and our reporting, active sources and all of that.
Got it. So so this basically then you go out and you cover this story mm-hmm. from last October. And why don't you give us a quick background on what came to light and like why you decided to do this, and then we can talk about some fallout.
Yeah, for sure. So the lead up to this October article actually went back to June of the previous summer. And so when Roe v. Wade was overturned by Dobbs, there were a couple of professors at Notre Dame who started publishing op-eds in various publications, Salon, LA Times, Daily Beast, all of our favorite outlets.
Daily Beast.
They're the ones that canceled Ben Mora. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. So they were publishing these articles arguing that, abortion restrictions are bad health policy. Some of the articles they wrote in kind of the past year argued things like abortion doesn't actually kill a person, and that abortion restrictions actually lead to more abortion. Or I forget exactly how they phrased it.
They said it leads to more dangerous, like side, like back alley stuff, basically, right?
Like, yeah. So they kind of like, yeah, they were promoting kind of like the basic talking points, but they were identifying themselves as Notre Dame professors. So it's a bad look for the university. So a couple of my friends wrote an article in National Review that summer because Notre Dame's official news services like shared some of their articles that they had written. So that's what put them on my radar, these professors.
That's then interesting to have them. So like you could engage with the arguments themselves, and because obviously there's a precedent for what happens with abortion when it's not legal, because it wasn't legal until, in parts of the country, at least until Roe, and you didn't have a lot of dangerous back alley abortions, and what you mostly just had clinics that were operating beneath the law. And I mean, you know, but that's not really the point of all this, but you know, besides that, so what they were doing is they were going to like big public forums, you know, identifying themselves, like you said, as being professors from Notre Dame and proclaiming these views, you know, kind of with their whole chest. Like this is what they're saying to, you know, anybody who still subscribes to the LA Times.
Yeah. It's I assume because they had the credential of working for America's premier Catholic institution, right? That they use that to basically further their point. Like, this is my view, and I basically have the backing of the university, whether they had the backing or not.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
There's no shortage of like pro-abortion. There's no shortage of like pro-abortion middle-aged people that have things to say about it. So I'm assuming that those publications can't just run everybody, but obviously, right. If you get to tie in like, oh, well, this is almost like a hostile witness because they're part of a super Catholic university and they're an accomplished academic. So here's these articles.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, one of the professors actually who is writing these pieces before Dobbs, her academic, her academic specialty was on trade policy. So nothing to do with abortion. She'd actually...
Well, not if you've seen Sound of Freedom. There's a lot of trade going on in the...
No, so her shtick was kind of like anti-NAFTA, and she actually had spoken very positively about Trump's trade policy and like seemed like a pretty like level-headed lefty. But earlier in her career, she had done a lot of research on abortion restrictions and abortion. And so she actually talked about it's cited in a later article the Rover published that we can get to later. She talks about how she felt like this moral duty to start talking about abortion again once restrictions were coming. And especially Notre Dame being in Indiana was one of the first states to pass a law with that heavily restricted abortion post Dobbs. So I guess that's when things really escalated, is Indiana passed that law, Senate Bill 1, which went into effect September 15th. And on September 15th, she started tweeting out sending out through her social media various links to like abortionfinder.com, planc.org, planb.org, and all these various places that you can obtain abortion pills through the mail. And in addition to this, she put
we're grateful to say, are sponsoring today's podcast. www.abortionfinders.com.
Right. So on that day, she also, September 15th, she put this sign on her door that kind of euphemistically stated, like, if you need help with any and all healthcare access or something along those lines, like, contact me. And she gave her non-Notre Dame email. And then she also had this big letter J on her door. And she said in some of her tweets, like, here's abortion resources and supportive faculty members, like, have the letter J on their door, like, look for the J. So I'm not exactly sure.
Really hiding it by putting it out there and then telling you what they're going to put out there.
Yeah,
I kind of like the idea of, like, contacting her with the medical thing and be like, I'm really having trouble getting a referral for a sleep study. insurance isn't going to cover my CPAP without one. So do you have anyone in your network?
Yeah. So her reasoning was, it was like coming right up to her front door. Like, she's in Indiana. Indiana does this on the back of Roe versus Wade. So she's compelled that she has no other choice but to do this. And so, but then she goes out of her way also to not use her university email, right?
Yeah, so, I think the non-university email was probably foreseeing that there'd be at least some sort of resistance to this by the Notre Dame administration, which... Mm-hmm. Eventually, yeah, there more or less was, but anyway.
Yeah, so and I mean, it's a privacy thing. Like, I mean, I can't, that piece of it, I don't know that I fault, because, like, if people, you know, wherever you're standing on this, like, obviously people in these situations are in a tough spot. And so, you know, university emails, I guess Notre Dame is not a public school, but university emails can sometimes be argued to be public record. And so, I mean, but what it sounds like, again, is like, agree with her, disagree with her. These are stances that she was, you know, openly taking. And she said, you know, she felt convicted that she needed to be doing these things. And they were done, you know, out in the open.
And yeah, most, she even stated, like, very explicitly in one of her tweets, like, after she sent out the links to our sponsors, all these abortion websites, she said, if you have issue with access or cost, DM me. So, like, she was very clear, like, what, like, when I wrote this article, I didn't think it was controversial, any of the content. It's like, she's doing her best to put this out there through every avenue available to her.
Right.
And I'm just going to collect all the facts and print it to our audience, which will view her advocacy much more negatively. But I figured I was just, like, shifting the audience receiving her message rather than, like, putting out any sort of message on my own. Like, it was just a straight reporting piece. It wasn't an opinion article saying, like, she's evil and this and that is happening and here's why she's terrible. Like, no, I just, like, I put it in her own words. I even interviewed her for the piece because she spoke on this panel. It was titled Making Intersectional Feminist Sense of Abortion Bans.
Right. Post-Roe America.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So she spoke at this panel, and since I was planning to write this article, I attended the panel and recorded it to get some comments for the article. And then I approached her after, and yeah, I introduced myself, like, hey, I'm with the Irish Rover and I have a few questions for you. And we actually had, like, a very good conversation for 30 minutes. Like, I left that conversation thinking, okay, like, we strongly disagree, but, like, we can interact face to face and talk with each other. And I'm going to write my article. And yeah, it's a campus publication. Like, you don't expect that many people to view an article in a student newspaper. Like, I bet maybe 1% of the people who have read the piece at this point had even heard of the Irish Rover before this instance.
Well, and what's interesting about the lead up here is that it could have definitely gone a different way. Like, there's plenty of people who are very, they're on the opposite ends of issues and they speak publicly, you know, about their sides of things and whatnot, but then they continue to just sort of spar or they sort of just see it as kind of boosting each other. They're like, well, at the end of the day, yeah, like, my message is being broadcast to a wider audience who is is mostly going to be hostile to it, but it's also getting out there. Like a lot of times you see that in, you know, political stuff, and you see it with, you know, the Lib publications and the Daily Wire, and, you know, they're constantly like, I mean, what's the group that's always posting Nick Fuentes videos, and then they just get picked up by right wingers to like say, oh, based, like the right wing watch people, or like Media Matters with Tucker.
Media Matters.
Typically this sort of relationship that forms between people on opposite sides. And a lot of times they're friendly to each other in person.
Yeah. I mean, they literally send pieces back and forth.
Yeah.
Like if something's not doing too well, if there's not a lot of clicks and you're on the right, you can basically send it to a left wing thing and be like, here you go, trash me. And then they will trash you. Like they'll just trash you and you'll get the clicks and they'll get the clicks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in this case, you didn't have the sort of sparring back and forth, but, you know, keeping it going. Instead, it kind of broke down quickly and, you know, accusations start being made and things sort of go south in the back and forth over the issue.
Yeah, definitely. So, no, I mean, the couple days after the article was released, she started sending out mainly through Twitter. All these comments about the Rover and our journalistic standards or the lack thereof that she alleged. At one point, she even said that I didn't interview her. There were these couple of days after I published the piece that I was seeing all these things she was saying and claiming that we were lying about her. So I was kind of nervous at first. Like I went back and re-listened to my recordings and made sure I like had documented everything and cited it accurately.
So you recorded when you spoke to her after the conference too?
I did. Yes. Yeah. So I had that recorded. At this point, it's backed up in dozens of places to be sure I don't lose that recording.
When it wasn't like wearing a wire, I mean, you said I'm a journalist and you're at a panel. So, I mean,
exactly.
Well, you
exactly.
said you're with the Rover. So it's not like this isn't like a live action,
just a person
sting
yeah.
operation.
No, it wasn't. Like it was a very, like I said before, it was a very normal conversation that we had. Once I double checked and verified and made sure everything was accurate in the piece, I kind of figured that she's going to say her bit for the next couple of days, just because it's getting media attention kind of around the nation. The typical conservative publications got picked up, like Daily Wire, Washington Examiner, National Review, all of those places. And then I figured, okay, like once it kind of settles down, she's gonna, stop making these claims and it'll just go away and we'll be back to business as normal. And it kind of seemed that was going to be the case, except for in January, someone started a GoFundMe on her behalf that said in the description that it was to raise money for legal fees. So then people started asking me, like, is she suing the Rover or what's going on? And I kind of laughed. I was like, no, like there's no way she's suing the Rover. Like maybe there was something behind the scenes that she was upset with the university about. And she's suing them because she went on a sabbatical. She didn't teach the next spring and she said it was pre-planned like for finishing a book, but I thought like, okay, like maybe they kind of forced her hand on this and she's upset with the university about something else. So we then ran another article about her in March because the Notre Dame College Democrats invited her for a meeting and it was kind of to talk about her history with the abortion issue. And we thought that she's going to tell more of her personal story for why she cares about this issue in the way she does. And we thought it would provide a good personal context to the issue. So we ran this article and it was just like a normal Rover piece that didn't get a ton of clicks. Like people read it on campus, but it was nothing like that. This article didn't blow up and we didn't expect it to.
So I say, I don't say this term negatively, but you wanted to basically cover your guys's like side of the story with this second piece. It was like a preemptive type thing.
I mean, I guess the thought process, it was kind of, we wanted to cover our side of the story, but also like she had gotten a lot of national attention through this. And sure. If she was going to provide like context and reasoning behind why she cared about this issue. Like, I figured like another piece almost would make her appear more human to the audience. It's like, she's not like some, yeah, it's like she, there's reasons and things in her life that led her down this path.
Got it.
So I just thought it'd be helpful context for our readers. And I really didn't think that much about the second article. Another writer asked like, oh, this event's happening, can we write a piece? And I considered it and I thought, yeah, that it would be a good thing to do. But then, yeah, so nothing had really developed over like the next 7 months after the initial piece. But then in March, I got an email from a reporter with New York Magazine's The Cut. And they said, we're running an article on Tamara Kay. Do you have any comment? Would you be willing to sit down for an interview? And yeah, so I figured that she was going to kind of ask me about my kind of journalistic process. And like, since I hadn't said publicly that I had a recording of the interview. So really how it stood right there was still just Professor Kay's tweets in which she said that I hadn't interviewed her. So I thought, okay, I can clear my name on some of these accusations through this article. So The Cut reporter interviewed me and she kind of asked all the questions I was expecting her to, like, did you interview her? I'm like, yes, I have a recording of it. And she asked me like a few other questions about why I wrote this piece and like if I stand by what I said.
Quick tangent. The Cut is really important to this podcast because they were the ones who rocketed Anna Delvey to national, in fact, probably global fame with their article about her. Yeah, they did the article. The Jessica Pressler article that is the basis for the Netflix series was based on the New York Magazine article. It was called "Maybe She Had So Much Money She Just Lost Track of It." So, and then obviously we're big supporters of the Free Anna movement, and we just wish her the best in all things.
So she can get back to doing what she does best.
Yes, doing that with those things. Yes, exactly.
So
her unique. Anyway, okay, back to what we're talking about, guys. So, New York Magazine, The Cut.
So wait, so when you said, I do have a recording, did that click any, like she asked to hear it or did she, what was her response to that? Because she probably didn't expect you to have one because she was told you didn't have one, right?
Yeah, so she kind of just like, yeah, accepted it. But then when the article came out, the citations for Professor K, she changed tack a little bit. She was like, oh, he talked to me, but I didn't realize he was interviewing me. And I was like, at this point, I was like, I'm pretty sure like I introduced myself with the Rover. So I went back and listened to it again. I was like, oh yeah, like the first words out of my mouth, they're like Joe Durrell, editor-in-chief of the Irish Rover. So once she heard I had a recording, I'm guessing, yeah, and it's just speculation. Like, okay, like maybe the reporter went to Professor K and she's like, oh, he did talk to me. And then, so the comments kind of adjust, like they changed from her initial tweets about the piece to this article.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it made me, I guess I did a good job with the interview because they barely cited me at all. So, and it was, it's like there are a lot of kind of gotcha type questions.
Well, you know, it would be, given that it was already known and stated by the professor that you have no journalistic integrity, it wouldn't make sense to quote you or provide any coverage for you in this write-up, right?
It is
true. That's true. Because I guess I was a very irrelevant piece to this story, so it didn't make sense to put my words in there.
So they do the classic thing where the words kind of get switched to, like, whatever the waterfall is of, he didn't interview me. Okay, he interviewed me, but I didn't know. Okay, he interviewed me and I know, but I didn't say that stuff. Okay, he interviewed me, I knew, I said that stuff. They're taking it out of context.
Yeah, so I guess the interview question really hasn't been pushed at all since that article came out. Right. I guess, yeah, once Professor K found out I had a recording, like that hasn't really come into question at all again.
Well, just that piece of the story nice.
kind of It's actually interesting. So, I mean, I assume we're getting to the lawsuit itself, but in the lawsuit, they barely even mention my initial article about her. Like, there's one line in the lawsuit that's like, this piece is defamatory with no specifications. But the whole bulk of the lawsuit is citing things from the March article about her meeting with college Democrats. And that was like a piece that got no outside attention and that was just kind of like a little blip.
So the whole goal is to sue you, but also kind of ignore where all this came from and just say it kind of started in March.
Yeah, so they start the lawsuit with the October article, but then the main bulk of it is all citing things like quibbling over quotations in the March article, which, yeah, is just kind of odd. But, yeah, so it was actually in the Cut article. Professor Kay was cited as saying that she's contemplating legal action against Irish Rover and against the university. And that was really the first time that I took seriously the possibility that she was going to sue us. It was on the day that that article was released, her lawyers sent us a letter of intent to sue. It was sent, I think that was Holy Thursday, which I guess maybe there's some irony there.
When 3 days later, you would rise again and be interviewed on this podcast. No, she,
anyway. Yeah. But yeah, so the letter of intent to sue came, and even then, like, I didn't really think that I thought it was kind of a scare tactic. Like, I was like, there's no way she's actually going to go through with a defamation suit. Like, there's no grounds for that. But lo and behold,
and it usually is. Like, a lot of times, people will resort to cease and desist or things like that to basically be like, look, I don't want to play like this, and if unless you want to like go somewhere, you need to just stop. And a lot of people are like, okay, sorry, like I'll just drop it. Like, normally I don't think that there's actually that strong of an intent. Like, people just kind of use those to say, okay, look, I'm raising the stakes, like let's cut this out.
That was my initial reaction to it, and that was kind of my assumption. But yeah, come a month or two later, we get the actual lawsuit in the mail. And
certified mail?
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Was it certified mail?
It was, it was like a letter from her lawyer, like a physical letter in the mailbox. And
interesting.
Yeah. So that's when we reached out. Like, we had already kind of been in contact with lawyers and getting legal representation, and we're being, supported pro bono, which I'm very grateful for. It's not draining the small budget of donations that we've gathered at the Irish Rover.
The Rover doesn't seem, with all due respect, doesn't seem equipped to handle a lawsuit just based on.
Well, I mean, it is a newspaper, so that kind of tells you financially.
Yeah, I mean, a student publication doesn't typically. Yeah, I don't think it typically keeps their rainy day lawsuit check saved somewhere.
So now you're kind of in the thick of it. It's getting real.
Exactly. Yeah. So then we had to decide, okay, how are we going to handle this case? Unfortunately, Indiana has very strong anti-SLAPP laws, which are for motion. It's a motion to dismiss lawsuits against publications and newspapers. So we filed an anti-SLAPP motion to dismiss the case, and that will be heard on September 27th. So hopefully it'll all disappear after September 27th. It can be dismissed. We can. We'll see what happens then.
What's the latest with this teacher? Is she back at Notre Dame? Is she off sabbatical now and teaching again?
I believe she has a class this semester. I think she's teaching one class. I looked on Class Search just because I was curious, and there was something listed under her name. So apparently she's back on campus,
Okay. I'm looking at the picture on the article of her door.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she's very clearly not a person who hides what she believes in. She has a Rainbow Ally sticker. She has a picture, a thing that says, "I still believe Anita Hill," mm-hmm. with some writing on it that I really can't make out. And she has another paper that says, "Families belong together and free," which I think is a paper for like a rally or something.
Well, and so these are like standard lib stances. Like this, well, is, this woman's obviously not some monster. And like what I think what is interesting is like she says these things, lots of people say these things, and then you've repeated them, and this is somehow like a tort. Like that's this. It, like normally, I mean, I don't know much about defamation. I haven't finished the Johnny Depp series on Netflix for our upcoming episode, but like normally. Doesn't the person have to be like, I didn't say this, or I wouldn't say this, or these aren't my beliefs? Because like, has anything? I remember you mentioned that like when you talked about her, the notice on her door about helping people get medical care. I think she suggested that she was talking about people who've been assaulted and getting them mm-hmm. medical attention, which is very real. Or go ahead.
I was going to read the exact. This is a safe space to get help and information on all healthcare issues and access confidentially and with care and compassion. My non Notre Dame email is reprohealthandhumanrights. So she made up a different email for this. It's not even her actual one. So, and then she,
which again, makes sense. If people right. will be sharing confidential stuff to that. Like,
yeah,
what I can't grasp, like I get if she basically says, look, you knew that your audience wasn't going to like this and you knew that this was going to make me notorious. And like, you know, Joe, you're a jerk, like whatever, like that, you could say that. But like, I just think about nothing. Where the courts, yeah. Like where do the courts, what, amplifying somebody's message to an audience that sure, you know, in advance isn't going to be like, great. Like I stand with the good doctor. Like it's, like that's where I've had trouble grasping how this lawsuit continues. Like, I guess it makes sense. You're saying that in where you're at, the courts don't just throw things out, but like what, where's the misrepresentation? Like that, that's where I'm just kind of like, I don't get it. And like, I mean, again, don't know anything about the law. I'm only a podcaster and accountant, mm-hmm. but like, don't you have to lie, or don't they have to say that you're lying?
Yeah. So I guess I didn't know much about defamation law until a couple months ago.
You didn't study defamation law in your free time?
It's not what I did. Maybe I should have.
Yeah.
I was in mock trial for 1 year in high school and we had a defamation suit. So I joked that I was like, defamation was the suit for the year. So I joked that I was an expert because of my valiant duty as the bailiff on a mock trial team that I somehow got recruited to join. But no, that was the extent of my knowledge of that area of the law. But I guess the first step is there's two different standards for public figures and non-public figures. And I guess it's typical that you can establish university professors as public figures. And if you do that, then you have to show that you acted with what you said has to be untrue or spoken with reckless disregard for whether it was true or false. And you have to act with actual malice. So you have to be like trying to take them down. I think that if they're not a public figure, then the actual malice piece does not apply. But regardless, like if you're like saying a message that someone doesn't like, but that they did say, like, is never going to be defamation.
So, I mean, to Zach's point, she seems just like a classic boring lib with all the classic takes, right? It doesn't actually seem like she is, you know, outside of reviews, malicious, right? She's just putting all this stuff on her door.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, I mean, she's not hiding anything. She is a teacher and you're taking a picture. You're not breaking into her office to take a picture. You're not really doing anything shady. You're just, it's really interesting to me that I mean, I can see she's probably embarrassed to some extent, right? Like she realized it, all her lib views at a Catholic university become much more real when you're actually challenged on them or put it out in the public. So I'm sure there's part of her that's really nervous about that. But what's her teaching status? Is she tenured?
She's tenured.
So she can't just be let go, even if she violates Catholic teaching, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, and has there been any instance, like, I mean, has anybody been like, you know, camped out of her house or yelling at her on campus? Like, is there any known instances of people like, you know, giving her serious blowback?
Yeah. So I know that she, a couple of weeks after the article, her email, if you sent an email to it, because I sent like a follow-up at some point, and her email gave like an automated response, like ND Police Department is monitoring my email, this and that. Mm-hmm. So, and in the Cut article, she cited like some of the nasty things that were said to her through email.
Probably there was probably stuff. I mean, people are.
But that's just like that's just like being online. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I get like the weirdest stuff. Like, I mean, I've had people mail me photos of the inside of my apartment. Like, I mean, before it was an empty. You know, it was like from when they were showing it or something. But it was like, okay. So I mean, I don't know. Like, some of that's just how the internet works.
And the other thing of crazy. The other thing she mentioned in the Cut articles, I think it was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was like Christmas Eve. Someone peed on her porch and she like said like this might be some sort of retaliation, but also it's
maybe
like,
they were doing a pregnancy test.
We do all live in South Bend also, so it's like South Bend, Indiana, it's not that uncommon of a thing.
I mean, if it's number one, like, I don't know. Like, when I've been to Notre Dame, all those houses are right there on campus. So I feel like if you knew a professor's there, and Christmas Eve is AKA right after finals. So, I mean, I feel like people, I mean, you shouldn't do that, but it's like, I don't know. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Sorry. So,
I mean, I hate that happened. I don't want that happening to anybody, but also that's somebody peeing on your porch. Okay.
Yeah. So I guess that all of the kind of, I think to claim damages from this lawsuit, even that, like, also, like, to me at least seems very tenuous, but what do I know, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get on just a personal level being like, hey, I'm out promoting my beliefs, which to me amount to I'm protecting women, and you're spreading it to, you know, an audience that's not friendly to it. Like, I don't like that you're doing this, but I don't really see how it goes past like, hey, you know, you suck. Like, you know, maybe the courts, I mean, hopefully they don't feel different. I just can't imagine, again, with my extremely limited understanding of the law, that amplifying a message to a different audience than, you know, like that, that'd have to be a whole new tort, like just, you know, some kind of new concept in the law that says you can't, it's only okay when you say it here at the,
were you direct, you weren't directing anybody to like, if you want to reach out and make your views known, or this is where you can protest. You didn't do any of that either in any of these.
No, I didn't. And I,
right.
Yeah. And like in the photo we posted a photo of her office door in the article, like to show the exact words of the sign, but we like blacked out the office number and her
That's
name.
Right, you did. Yeah, right next to it. It's small, but there's blackout. Yeah.
So yeah, because like I didn't want to like, I mean, I thought it was okay, this is happening on a Catholic campus, and yeah, this advocacy can do a lot of harm to students, but I wasn't like in putting that message out there and choosing to write this article, like I didn't want to direct any like animosity like at her. I wasn't like asking for her to like, yeah, I wasn't asking for people to protest or to show up her office or any of that. And I tried to,
which is really
not like circulating petitions to have her tenure revoked or fired. Like you really weren't doing anything that wishes harm on anybody.
Yeah, like, I know. I wrote the article, and it's like I'm
so
not
many
gonna, like,
people do. Like they would, right? Like so many people would blast if they were going to do something like this. They would blast the article. They would twist it. They would include right. either like a form letter that you can print out and send to the regents to say no heretics on camp. Like they would, like people do bad stuff, but like you didn't do any of those things.
Yeah.
Like as that we, it was a public interest story.
As we famously know, journalism is the enemy of the people, but this seems like a instance where journalism went above and beyond to maintain some sort of dignity for all involved and just state what was happening.
Yeah. And I mean, and to her credit, like Notre Dame is a very pro-life place. And if you actually have like, in some twist, yeah, if you actually have like a moral conviction that, okay, abortion restrictions are wrong and you're willing to sacrifice to like put your views out there, it's like, it does take a lot of real courage. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, like I strongly disagree with her position and I'm going to try and draw attention to what she's saying. Mm-hmm.
She doesn't seem like an activist, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the next week I wrote an opinion article kind of like calling out the kind of like conservative culture warrior who is like pretends like that they're fighting this battle. I think that looking back is kind of funny. I really got up on my soapbox, but I said I said at the end of this, I said today, like in scare quotes, conservative Catholics dub themselves warriors in the face of the hostile culture. But if we will sacrifice less for Christ, then others will for the right to sacrifice their children.
That's
cultural
right.
revival unequivocally will not begin in our lifetime.
Hear, hear.
So actually on that, another story that recently happened that I'm getting a lot of love, but also a lot of hate for my take on Twitter with this like culture war thing. So recently there was, actually I didn't see the date because it was a screenshot of an article, but basically this Catholic man who was working for Bitwarden, who makes like encrypted password keeper apps, was asked to disclose his pronouns. I don't know the context, but he listed his pronouns as assigned by God, and at least according to the article, was fired for doing that. And so what was spreading was that this Catholic was fired for saying that his pronouns were assigned by God. And my view on that was like, basically, you should not jeopardize your ability to feed your family in order to get like 15 minutes of fame on right-wing blogs, and that like right-wing blogs should stop encouraging people to disadvantage themselves. Like, and I've said this for a long time that, you know, these right-wing blogs will encourage people to get fired or to, you know, have all these problems, or they'll, you know, they'll have a critique that not everyone should have to go to school. So they'll tell their audience to don't go to college. And it's like, so I've always had that kind of take. But anyway, this to me was like, people when I posted it were like, oh, so you think everyone should just give in to this stuff and whatever. And it's like, there's a difference between being asked to put your pronouns on something and just not doing it, as opposed to putting something that's just designed to be inflammatory. And it's like, you just shouldn't be stupid. Have you seen that like story out there?
Yeah, I saw your tweet about it the other day. It was the only time I came across this story. But yeah, I do think there is a real danger when you kind of get caught up in, yeah, like culture war politics. And it's like, okay, like there are real things that you should take a moral stand on. And if you like, you shouldn't go against your conscience on these things. But there is like this battle for clicks. And like, if you, but as soon as you're like feeding like normal people's lives into this machine, it's like, okay, like what are you actually helping? And I think like on the flip side, it's like, okay, like if he gets fired for doing this and then like everyone posting about it, I'm sure that he's going to have a much easier time getting a new job for, yeah, a company that is, yeah, okay, or likes what he did. So I guess, yeah, it is like two sides of the coin. Like, are you encouraging this and it's detrimental to him, or did this happen and you're spreading the story and it's going to help him out and help him get back on his feet after this? But it definitely is a weird cultural moment that we're in through this.
Yeah, because I think that it's very different if somebody is like, I was asked to put my pronouns down. That's very much, I don't think that that should be happening. You know, I think it represents agreeing with all sorts of things that I don't agree with. So I refused and I was fired. Or, you know, the application, it was a computer app and it was a required field. So I just put dots in it so that it would let me advance to the next page. And then they fired me. It's like, that's a very different story. And I think that person, you know, would garner a lot of sympathy. And, you know, I don't think that there's some hard line that I can, this played out in a group chat I was in, but I don't think that putting your pronouns in something is explicitly crossing a line, you know, unless you believe it is. Like, there's not like a teaching on putting he, him in a box if you're a man, you know, like it's symbolic though. And if that's something that's concerning to you, and most people would probably say it is, you know, don't do it. But this wasn't that story. And it's like, you know, I typically don't believe most of the GoFundMe type stories, but the GoFundMe for the guy who just said, I'm not going to answer this, is very different than the guy that was like, oh, I put something that I knew was going to own the libs and now I'm fired. And I mean, I do wonder for other employers if they're like, I mean, are you going to be like, what headline are you going to generate when you work for us? So, I mean, I don't wish this person any ill will, but I just think it's like different. And when there's real material things happening and like, you know, it's like, well, the rent is too high, guys. Like, can we not, like food is twice the price as it was last year. Do we need to be thinking
it's all a distraction, Zach.
What kind of is?
No, it is. They were distracting us from, you know, they try to distract us from the real stuff. A friend of the show who I will not name, I will not out him, said that if he were to be asked to put pronouns in his bio for his job, he would just say, I'm uncomfortable with that and I don't feel like being outed, or something along those lines. But it was a very like simple thing to say, like, I just don't want to do this and I don't feel comfortable with putting this thing about me out there. Which
You get fired for that too. I mean, I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah.
And that's, I've also always thought that there's a weird progressive argument you could even make to be like, okay, by making everybody do this, there's going to be some portion of the population that you're either forcibly outing or you're forcing them to misgender themselves. Mm-hmm. Think about it.
So one thing people listening to this, we kind of joked about it as far as when I said Notre Dame was Protestant, and we joke, like, that's the obvious joke that like a lot of people make, and I know it's probably annoying to you, but what is the thought, like, because it, how do you think this looks for the university? Like, as far as, do people think they didn't do enough like to get this lady out, or do they, because it is obviously, she holds views that cut against Catholic teaching, which is not uncommon at these universities. But like, what's been the response on that? And what do you think, like, what do you think there's this play? Because I guess the piece, Father Jenkins, is Father Jenkins the president of Notre Dame?
Yeah, Father Jenkins.
He responded that, he said in somewhere, I should have had this up, but like, that they respect academic freedom or something like that.
Yeah. So this
is like makes people cringe when they hear, you know, a priest talk about that in terms of things that cut against Catholic teaching. But sorry.
Yeah. So if I'm remembering if I'm thinking of the same thing as you, it was in, I think, December. So after my initial article, this professor, along with another professor at Notre Dame, published an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune, kind of making the same article, same arguments about like abortion restrictions are bad, health policy, or something along those lines. And the next day, Father Jenkins responded with a short letter. And in that, he said, I'm responding because they chose to identify themselves as Notre Dame professors. And he said, while I respect their ability to like publish on what they want and academic freedom, like their views like do not reflect those of the university, and it's like, and he stated like it was actually fairly strong, his statement there. Like, they don't reflect the views of the university in their content, tone, or something else. So it's like, yeah, I'm not going to stop them from publishing these articles, but at the same time, the Notre Dame does not hold the positions they hold. They never said anything public about like the sign on the door or her social media activity, but it is worth noting that she did take the sign down, and also she deleted her Twitter account. And in the Cut article, it goes in with a little more detail. It's the only thing that the university administration has been cited on this issue. And it does seem that they were fairly strong-armed in making her, I guess, at least like be less blatant with her kind of positions or with her advocacy or with the healthcare sign.
That's good. I'm not going to like keep putting you on the spot, but like, that's good to hear that Father Jenkins is like that. I know nothing about him, so I don't want to assume, but it's nice. I mean, it's one, you know, the other question of should these people even be let through the doors to teach is a whole nother topic, but it's nice knowing that when people show these views, that at least the president will stand by and say like the university doesn't condone this.
Yeah. And I was actually very pleased with how in the Cut article, the Rover and the university were painted as like the joined forces bad guys in the stories against Professor K. And it was like, it was very comforting to like be put on the same side as the school.
Yeah. Especially being a not really, you know, not loosely, but whatever affiliation you have with them, it's nice that they, that they stood by you.
Because I mean, generally Notre Dame is a very pro-life campus. I mean, the largest student organization on campus is the Right to Life Club with like 700 members. They've sent almost 1,000 people to the March for Life many of the past couple of years.
Got it.
So yeah, and there is a lot of kind of institutional support for life issues. And so that's one thing that they normally are very good on. So that's what part of what made it so disappointing to see over the summer and the fall that they weren't doing anything, and why I felt so strongly that I had to write this piece and draw attention to it, is to, hope that the administrators would take kind of a stronger stance on this. And I do understand that right now they are caught in a very tough position, because it's like, she's a tenured faculty member. They need to at least in some sense stand up for her, but also like it's a Catholic school and they need to stand up for, they need to stand up for church teaching and for their students who could be harmed by, advocating for access to abortion pills through mail or this and that. So they are caught in a very tough spot on how they deal with it. And it makes sense that they're trying to deal with it behind the scenes. So I guess I'm optimistic that they're doing their best to find the right solution behind the scenes. And I'm not surprised that, especially while there's a lawsuit pending, they haven't made any sort of like loud public statement about it.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to hear. I don't know what I expected, but you know, I certainly glad that when you, if you say you, the one who's like at the forefront of this issue, if you say you're happy with how Notre Dame has handled it on air, and that's pretty refreshing.
I mean, happy is a strong word, but I'm content.
Sure.
Well, so in addition to this, we mentioned in your bio that you have worked for different publications, including First Things and Compact. And then you have also just had a review published in the National Catholic Register on Tyranny Inc. by friend of the pod, Sora Bamari. We've had him on twice, I think, Matt.
Yeah, 2x, 2x guest.
Two-time guest in the old days before the hiatus. So anyway, so everyone should read that review. And I figured we've got a little bit of time. We could talk about kind of your impressions of the book or what you were thinking there.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I read the book a couple weeks ago, and a lot of the reviews that I'd seen, it was kind of positive reviews by left-wing publications and just like more sane publications, and then people trying to trash it but not really being able to when like the libertarian type publications. But I thought that the one angle that kind of had been missing was its relation, their Sorab's arguments relation to Catholic social teaching and what the churches had to say about these issues. So yeah, I pitched a review to National Review to kind of do a side-by-side reading of Tierney Inc. and Rerum Novarum, and to see kind of the implicit logic and the questions that Pope Leo XIII raises in Rerum Novarum, and the issues he kind of predicts that the world will have to confront. Sorab is trying to offer a solution to those questions. And really, I think that, I mean, for those who have read the book, like, it's very compelling and just kind of common sense, a lot of Sorab's proposals. So I thought it would be good just to, yeah, throw something very uncontroversial out there and just say, like, okay, like, here's what Sorab's saying, here's what Pope Leo says, and they align. So even though a lot of like culture war conservative Catholic types who are also in a marriage with the free market and burning their incense to the invisible hand, they might come to realize, okay, like, there are like serious economic considerations that the church has put out in the past 150 years in post-industrial society. And those views that kind of get lumped in as evil and liberal by the culture war type Catholic, like, well, actually on economic questions, there is a lot of good that the left wing in American politics has been promoting for the past several decades. And it's something that we should be on board with as Catholics.
Yeah. I thought I listened to it on audiobook. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was hopeful and slight. It was depressing yet hopeful, mm-hmm. in its own way. And I think I'll save my thoughts, because I think, Zach, we're going to talk about it on another episode. But yeah, I read your piece and I like that. And
no, thank you.
It's definitely a good conversation. It's just, I think it's a very worthwhile conversation as we enter whatever stage of America we're entering, and what's expected from us as citizens and expected from us from like the labor force.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, thanks for joining us. This has been fun, and we'll follow the developments in your case as they unfold, obviously rooting for Team Joe and the Rover in this one.
That's right.
Rogue Thank old you. Thank you again Joe. To our sponsors.
Yeah. Where can they find you, Joe?
Yeah, so the Irish Rover's website is irishrover.net.
Okay.
And yeah, while I'm a student, that's where I'm mostly publishing. And then I send it all out along with all of my random disconnected thoughts through my Twitter, I guess. But feel no obligation to follow that.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is great. Thanks for doing all that, bringing it to everyone's attention, and it's well worth people's time to read it. And I think it shows like how you can report these things and how you can do this work without just getting into the muck. Yeah. I mean, I should say that you're in a lawsuit, so the muck came to you, but you at least didn't invite the muck.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I guess despite our best intentions, sometimes, the issues will confront us. But I guess it's a good thing to kind of check off the bucket list if I'm going to have a career as a journalist.
Get it out of the way.
Got the lawsuit done. So now I can move on to writing with more freedom.
Soon you'll be shouting questions in a White House press corps briefing.
Oh, please no.
Zach, you have anything?
No, I mean, this was fun. And, you know, again, stay in touch and hopefully we can have you back in the future to hear about your victory.
Yeah, that's right. I hope so. I'll look forward to that episode. Thank you guys so much for having me.
All right, guys, we'll talk with you next time.